The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Mother, my sister just got up because she saw me put up my sweater. So to hold up this microphone, she thinks we're going to go on the walk now, and we're not. I'm just going to sit here and talk. So I did a trolley tour, good old-fashioned trolley tour narration. That is the interview portion of the show today. You can see the interview with me and the narrator and the driver. And to be honest, the driver was so much more interesting than the narrator guy I talked to. He was, he felt kind of douchey the entire time. Even when I started talking afterwards, I regretted talking to him. I'm sure he's a very nice guy. Maybe I'm just being judgmental, but I didn't care for this guy at all. Driver, awesome. Love that guy. He was so much more interesting and outgoing and cool.
Hey, what's going on? We're in Atlanta with the Trolley Tours, and I'm here with Lester, our driver. Hi, Lester.
Hi.
And then it's C, who is our tour guide. So first, let's start off real quick. C, why did you want to become a tour guide, a trolley tour guide for the city of Atlanta?
Well, I love this city. There's a lot of cool stuff about it people don't know, and it's really fun to, you know, let people know about it, basically.
And Lester, what... I mean, obviously, these trolleys, you need a CDL license to drive them?
Yes.
Where did you get your CDL license from?
I got them here in the state. I've had them since 74, when they first came
1974,
out.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but what was the job that you did that got you the CDL?
I have a degree in transportation safety and logistics.
Wow. So I didn't even know that was a college thing. But, of course, I come from a city where you can actually major in comedy. So that sounds like a much much more practical. As a comedian who's touring the country right now, I can tell you, your degree is much more practical than mine is.
Yeah.
So
that's why I got into it. When I retired from corporate work, I went in. I wanted to see the country. Best way to see the country? Drive a motor coach. So I drove a motor coach all over the country. And then when I came back home, after I retired, I said, I got to have something to do. And that's what I did.
Excellent. So this is your retirement job?
Yes.
Yes. We in Boston, Dr. Wilson, where I work, there's a lot of former military and a lot of former sea captains that retire and then come to Duck Tours as their retirement job. So it sounds like if you have a CDL and you want to retire, go into tourism.
Yeah, that's it.
See, what were you doing before you became a trolley tour guide?
What was I doing? I was waiting tables. Yeah. Yeah, waiting tables at a bar that's now closed.
Is it one of the bars that we see on the tour?
No, it's not. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, worse than the bars we see on the tour.
That's why it's closed. Perfectly. Yeah. Well, what got you into history? Were you always a history buff? Because me, someone who gives historic tours, I hate history. I have no interest in it. I am there strictly so I can tell jokes, and I learned enough history just so I could tell my jokes on tour. But for you, were you always a history buff?
Yeah, I kind of always been into history, especially, like, more so since I got the job, I would say. Just Atlanta history and history in general, yeah.
And throughout the tour, what has been your favorite aspect of history that you've had to learn that makes this enjoyable for you?
But my favorite aspect of history I've had to learn that makes it enjoyable for me. I don't know. Some of the sports stuff is interesting because that's not... I don't necessarily pay attention to that in my normal life, most of the sports, but like the like stadiums and like stories of like Georgia Tech won a game 222-0.
That's quite a fact.
That kind of stuff that I just wouldn't have known without having this job.
Longest home run.
Yeah, the longest home run being here. Yeah, different stuff like that.
Then, of course... The Crackers. That was also a good... I am not... living in Boston, you would think that I'm a sports guy. I am not. So I talk very rarely about the sports, even though we have the oldest stadium, the first football game, the first World Series, and all that up there. So when somebody asks for a sports issue, I was like, I got three things for you, that's it. And what has been... what has been the person from the farthest distance that has traveled to get to your tour?
Farthest distance, I think, is like Australia, Japan, you know, like as far as you can get, really.
Yeah, today we had some people from Sweden. Do you keep track of, because a lot of people I work with keep track of different cities, different states, visitors, and different countries. Is that something that you keep interest in?
I don't record it, but I remember, like, I think that's the first time, like, I just had some people the other day here from, think it's Tajikistan.
Yeah, see, you hear names of places, you're like, I didn't know that was a thing.
I was like, I got no idea where that is, but I'm sure you're the first people I've had from it. They won the contest that day, yeah.
And then, Lester, final question for you. Mm-hmm. You drive, you lived here, this is your city, you grew up here.
Yeah.
You grew up in the state, and you know this place. Do you, have you ever wanted to get out of the driver's seat, move to the right here, to the nice, comfortable bench that C is sitting in, and give your hand to talking to the audience, giving your opinions and facts and your history of your personal perspective of the city of Atlanta?
Yeah, every once in a while when we don't have a tour guide, but I don't sit over there.
Yeah, you said
I do it from here. Yeah, and give it a tour from here.
It's easier to narrate and drive from there than it is to drive from there.
Yeah.
And it's easier to narrate and drive from here. I don't like sitting there because you have to be looking back.
Yeah.
And I'd rather not be looking back.
I'll say Lester certainly knows a lot more about all this than any of us tour guides because he's lived here longer than the rest of us have been alive. So he's accumulated the actual, lived-in knowledge compared to, I've been here 5 years,
Yeah.
Where did you move here from?
Dallas, Texas.
Oh, all right. I'm going to be in Dallas in the next couple of days.
Oh, nice.
I was there last year, tried to do the JFK tour, and it rained, and I was not going to do it.
Yeah.
Been great talking to you guys. It was a great tour. Thank you guys so much for doing it. And if somebody wants to take a tour of Atlanta, see which is the best place people can find taking a tour.
ThePeachTreeTrolleyCo.com. Or just Google Peachtree Trolley Atlanta. It will pop up. You guys through Viator or whatever. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks.
I enjoyed it. He has a lot of really good facts, mostly humorous, but he does that puking kind of delivery where he talks about things like this. And that is grating and annoying to hear. For me, at least, someone who works in the audio and now tourism business. In the world of radio, we call this style of delivery puking, because it's kind of what you're doing. You're over-inflecting everything you say. Kind of like you overdo when you're puking. But the tour was fun and interesting, a lot of facts. After the tour, I went to the Coca-Cola Museum, and I'm embarrassed to say that I spent more money at the Coca-Cola Museum than I have on any amusement, theme park, tourism, any other attraction in my entire life with the exception of Disney. I spent way too much money there. I bought souvenirs for family. I sent them back. I spent money for the photos, which now I think I just remembered I left the photos in Jacksonville, so I might have to go back to the Jacksonville post office to see if they still have it. Or call them and say, hey, can you mail them to me because you are a post office. Mail them to my house. The only reason I actually care about the photos is, A, I paid for them a lot. But also, more importantly, it has the receipt with the QR code to the digital versions of the photos that I took of Sister and I. They're professional photos, which are not very good. Kind of, the lighting is a little too much. It's a little blown out, but Coca-Cola Museum was cool. It was fun. It was interesting. I took a ton of pictures. I took a lot of pictures. Maybe this goes back to the things. I read a lot of the things on the walls, but also kind of skipped a lot. I'll read the photos later. But I paid attention to a lot of the things in the Coca-Cola Museum. So this goes back to that thing that 25% of the museum is what's interesting to me. Just give me that 25% condensed. And the Coca-Cola Museum, it was more like 80% of it was more interesting to me. Consumerism, maybe that's the problem. All right, so we're on our updates. North Carolina was the last one. We're now let's talk about Atlanta, because Atlanta was quite the peach. I drove overnight from Charlotte to Atlanta. I got in Atlanta about 6:30 in the morning, and I decided on getting a cheaper hotel. I like to stay in Marriott's. I have a Marriott credit card. I'm a member with them. I just enjoy the hotel. This is not sponsored by Marriott, but if let's work something out. I decided instead to stay at a Motel 6, and this was the decision that solidified, or this was the stay that solidified the decision that I am not staying at any other place other than a Marriott resort, Marriott ever again. It was that, no offense to Motel 6, but it was cheaper, and that's why I went for it. It was like $50, right in downtown Atlanta, and it was worth $50. Nothing was terrible. Nothing was awful. For Christmas, my mother gave me this UV light desanitizer. She was like, you should put it in your hotel rooms and just let it run in the hotel room before you go in. It'll kill all the ozone. It'll kill all the bugs and stuff with ozone. I'm like, that's not a thing. Anyway, but I haven't used it. Just felt dirty and dingy. It was fine. There were certain, like, nicks in the tub and, you know, the, like, if you go to stay at a Marriott, they have really nice shampoos and conditioner and body wash in the showers. They had just a bar of soap. No body wash, which is fine. I mean, you're getting what you pay for, and that's, I'm okay with it in that scenario, but it's like, I want the little better comforts, and I'm okay with paying a little bit extra for comforts. And when I stay at a Marriott, it's not that much more expensive. It's $100-ish a night, you know, 100 and 120, somewhere around. I can afford that most nights, but I wanted to see what this was. I just drove past a Motel 6, and I decided that I was going to stay at a Motel 6. Also, what you get it with staying at a $50 hotel in the middle of Atlanta is people playing music very loudly in their hotel room until 1, 2 in the morning. Not that big of a deal, but can be a little annoying for some, but not that big of a deal for me when I came home and started going to bed. And I really needed to get some sleep because I was by the end of the, I was upset and angry. We'll talk about why. And I was in pain. And we'll talk about why. But I am going to, I'm going to be staying at Marriott associated places from here on out. And I'm okay with that decision now. And I've tried the others. Well, I've tried one. And it was fine. It wasn't that, you know, you get people hanging around the hotel and they're a little more sketchy. And so I got in there at 6:30 in the morning and I checked in and I asked them if I could check in early. And they're like, you can't check in until at least 8 a.m. I was like, all right, cool. So let me figure out what to do. I get in the car and we sit in the parking lot, sister and I. We go to Waffle House to get breakfast. And I'm sitting there. It's like, well, I heard on the news that Jimmy Carter's body is here. So let's take this time to make some plans to go see him later today. And I realized that they're showing his body 24 hours a day. It's a completely open all day and night. So I was like, well, I got the time. Let's go. It's 20 minutes away. So we go. And it's raining. And yeah, I've made my opinions about driving in the rain evident before, and I drove all the way in the middle of the night through the rain. But we get there, and sister and I walk through the rain to Jimmy Carter's body, the repose, as they refer to him. It signs all over the Carter Museum, the Carter Library. And I have no opinion on Jimmy Carter. I grew up being told that he was a moron and an idiot and terrible, the worst president ever. And he was a silly little goofy peanut farmer and fine, whatever. Then also later in years, we saw he has all this humanitarian efforts that he's done. And he's a genuinely generous, nice human being and a salt of the earth kind of guy. So, all right, cool. Both, I don't care. But the reason I went is because
content.
No, because when am I going to have a chance to be in the hometown of a president who had just recently died and they're showing the body? So I should go. It's fine. There's no complaints. I'm not complaining about anything. For those who weren't able to go to it, it was interesting. For me, maybe this is just because I'm an outsider. The most interesting thing for me was not so much looking at his legacy, but was looking at the reaction of other people to him. I've had a lot of friends who have died from various methods and causes. And I've been sad because I've lost a friend. And I understand being sad that you lost someone you know. I don't understand being sad for the death of someone you didn't know. I have no emotions to Jimmy Carter's death. Other people were profoundly emotional about it when we were there. Now, I was there at 6:30 in the morning. There was very few people there at the hour. Mostly people of a certain age. Old. Because who else is awake at that hour, you know, on a Wednesday or whatever, Sunday, Monday morning, whatever it was when I was in Atlanta, whatever day it was. And I'm looking at these people getting, oh, when they're walking around the museum, people crying at the bottom, like, if you're not his family. Did you ever meet him? I'm looking at the ancient people, it's like, you weren't even alive during his presidency. I wasn't alive during his presidency. I was born a year after his presidency ended. Not even. I was born 4 months after 81. So the election was, what, 1980? So Reagan took over January 20th of 1980. So what, 4 months later? Literally 4 months, May 19th. Literally 4 months out of his thing. So I'm closer to him. I mean, I've still have nothing to it. So I'm not judging other people. I just don't understand that. Maybe I lack empathy. Or maybe they're overly empathetic. I don't know. Maybe I'm apathetic. Some people say I'm apathetic, but I just don't care. Anyway. So it's nice, the museum. Go check it out. The Carter Library. Whatever they're calling it. I mean, he had a lot of accomplishments during his presidency and a lot of ups and downs. So it's interesting to see. I didn't spend very much time in the museum. You have to go through the museum to get to the body. They put it at the end of the museum tour. And I'm going through it, and I'm looking, I'm taking pictures, I'm videoing things. You're not allowed to video or take pictures of the reposed. I hope I'm saying that. It's not repossessed. I know that. I know it's not repossessed. Unless he is possessed again. Hence, repossessed. All right, anyway. So I'm taking pictures and videos, and I'm looking and reading things. And yeah, my favorite thing was the Muppets, obviously. That's more at the time of history. The Muppet movie came out during his presidency. That's really what they put in there. He had no connection to the Muppets. I would have loved, there's a meme going around of his daughter Amy with the Ramones because they let her and Jimmy Carter into soundcheck because she couldn't go to the concert. Like, why can't she go see the Ramones? So there's a picture going around the internet right now of Amy Carter, Jimmy Carter's daughter, with the Ramones from the 70s, maybe early 80s, whatever it was, with Secret Service. So why is that not in the museum? Anyway, if it was, I didn't see it. So I got to do that. And luckily, you know, the rain didn't make it miserable. I would love to go through and tell you the experience, but it's like they had everything, which, by the way, this, I don't know if this made sense. Maybe the parking lot's not that big. I don't know. But the whole grounds of the Carter Library is closed off. So you can't get into the library. You can't drive up to the library. So they were shuttling people from the bus station or from the train station, I guess, to the museum. And when I pulled up, there was like, how do I get it? I drove around the whole place. It's a big, huge property. A lot of woods, and it's basically the library sit with inside of a park, pretty much from what I can gather by being there. And the, you know, officers and Secret Service agents were like, park anywhere and you can walk in. I was like, all right. So I parked literally just in the neighborhood next to a house, made sure I was legally parked, and I parked there. And the sister and I walked in from where I parked, which is right across the street from the entrance, to the body. It was about a little over half mile, let's say 6/10 of a mile. I kept track on my watch because it's my exercise. Go see Jimmy Carter's dead body was my exercise for the day. And I walked back to the car and remembered that I forgot my multi-tool. I forgot to take my multi-tool off before going in, so they had to confiscate it at security. The whole checkpoint that is the Secret Service agents, they look like junior Secret Service agents. They were very young, but they were ROTC Secret Service, if you ask me. They were young guys, but working the metal detectors, they let the hold on to it. I could get it back afterwards, and I walked away back to the car. I was like, I gotta walk all the way back. Got it, walked back to the car. So, good bit of exercise for sister and I first thing in the morning in the rain, in the mud. All in all, it took me about an hour to get there, go through it, pay my respects, walk back, forget my pocket knife, multi tool, my Gerber, and walk back to the car. if you were going, I would say you could easily spend an hour there if you really want to read about the history and read everything. I am not that guy. When I go to a museum or a place like that, I don't have the patience or the intelligence, maybe, I don't know, whatever it is, to read every single thing I come across. I look at it on my walkthrough. People who take so much time, I'm not good to going to a museum with. I went to the Isabella Gardner Museum with a friend from Duck Tours preseason this last year. And they have an app, and you can listen to narration about the things you're looking at. You scan a QR code and narration plays, and narration is like a minute or so. Even that was not quick enough for me as I go through things. So I had to, no offense to my friend Drake Spear, but I had to slow my pace and stay up with him. He was much more interested in all the stuff there than I am, and that's great. I love it. I wish I was. It was fine. It was fun. There were some cool things, but also there's like, let's say there was 20 things that we listened to, I have no idea what the number was, but let's say 20. I cared about maybe 5 of them. And I would have just been okay with you just give me the 5 things that is going to interest me only, and that's it. That's, maybe I'm impatient, I don't know. But it was nice to be able to go pay my respects to a very a man who donated a lot of his time and efforts to humanitarianism. Now, I can say that, but I can't say philanthropism. It's not like Daffy Duck. Suffering for philanthropism. So we go to the hotel, and we check in, and we get settled in, sister and I, and we go to bed, and we wake up, and I was supposed to do an open mic at the Laughing Skull, kind of a well-known comedy club, among comedians, at least, Laughing Skull. I hope I get this right. Laughing Skull was started by Steve Hofstetter, who's the comedian that's famous for going viral on the internet for his heckler takedown videos. So I thought this was going to be a club. Maybe I missed it or whatever, but I emailed them weeks in advance because they say, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday are open mics. Email 2 to 3 weeks in advance because they sign up fast. And I was like, well, done deal. I emailed them 2 weeks in advance, didn't hear back. Re-emailed a couple days going in, hey, just checking in on this, didn't hear back, you know, expecting the worst, and I got there, and it's, I got there early, I was like, hey, you know, I emailed, nobody got back to me about the open mic, yeah, we'll put you on standby, you know what, just tell me sorry, because what happened is, I never got on, I hung out there, and that's fine for some people, and probably sometimes I'm fine with, but don't waste my night. I hate wasting my time. I could have gone to another open mic instead. I'd rather you've just told me, oh yeah, sorry, no, can't help you out. You know, I emailed you 2 weeks in advance. I told you I'm from out of town. Could have made an effort to put me on. You didn't post the lineup 2 weeks in advance. You didn't have the light sign up solidified 2 weeks ago because you were checking comedians in. Don't give me this bollocks about, oh, we'll put you on the wait list in case somebody doesn't show up or fit you in. Which, by the way, who's fitting me in? Because I talked to the host and he goes, oh, I don't have that kind of, like, I checked in halfway through. So I was like, hey, how's the lineup looking? You think you're able to squeeze me in? Like, trying to be polite. You know, I bought food, I bought drinks, I'm supporting your venue. Think you're going to be able to fit me in? She goes, oh, I don't have the ability to make that decision. Like, when I told her that whomever was running the open mic to put me on standby, it did not seem like it was a concept to her that was something it was due. Now, no offense to her. She's not the problem with any of this. In fact, she was a very nice young lady who used to be in Boston doing comedy with me. Grunberg. Now, I've forgotten her first name now. I recognized her. She didn't recognize me. Shelly Grunberg. Nice girl. Very funny. There was a little bit of small audience there. This would have been not a tape-worthy performance, but it would have been a good place for me to do the jokes that are halfway between open mic and show ready. This would have been a good place for me to get a real reading from actual normal humans on these jokes are funny. It would have given me probably more feedback and more energy in the room to try and build off of these jokes. Now, the thing that I'm working on that's at that level is a 5-minute set or is more than a 5 minute set, but I only have four or five minutes of the open mic. So when I have that full of time, it's hard to riff. It's hard to be in the moment because you're just thinking of, I have the short amount of time. Let me hit the things that I want to work on and keep the narrative still held together and just waiting to hear feedback. Laughter or not laughter. But I left there and I went to an 11 o'clock open mic at some bar, and it was a good old fashioned surprise open mic. Which just, the worst of the worst. Okay, here we're back to complaining about open mics. Open mics that I don't perform on and open mics I am performing on. You know, people were, who were there for a good time and not for comedy. Apparently some people were there to see comedy, which is nice. But you had one comedian come out and just attack, you know, 8-6 dudes who were just there talking to themselves. They're not being disruptive. They're not heckling. They're not yelling. They're not yelling over us. They're not trying to talk over us. They're just talking to each other. It's okay, so they're not paying attention to you. A 24-year-old white kid who has a complex of things, everyone should have to pay attention to you because you grew up in a household where your mom coddled you and you think that everything you're saying is going to be precious? No. Let them just have their good time. Ignore them. And here's the thing. If you're good and you're funny and everyone else starts laughing, they'll pay attention. You don't need to get their attention by calling them a bunch of assholes.
Watch a 24-year-old that looks like a 59-year-old Moyle yell at a hockey group. I'm watching three gentlemen with jackets so expensive they clearly own boats look at their watch. Just wondering how long they can sit here before they're allowed to leave. This is awesome. And then a group of gentlemen right in front of me with enough camera equipment to film a Netflix special. This is... You ain't filming a porno, dude. Shut up. Dude, I live in Boston. I'm from Baltimore originally. I've met black people. Shut up. Okay. I live where they filmed The Wire because that's where the crime fucking happened, all right? You don't scare me. I suffer from sleep apnea. That, by the way, you know how much dominance I just asserted by not looking while he did pound it? He's like, all right, now he's been to a trap house. I can see he's...
I didn't need to go into and attack the other comedians, but then the next night in Atlanta, planned out to do the open mics that I wanted to do. First one's at 6 o'clock at night, and it's in this, I drive over to it, and it is in a, I leave from the hotel, which is like South Atlanta, to go to North Atlanta where this open mic is. I was like, cool, I can get two in it. I can get this one and then the 9 o'clock one. And I get there and I'm looking around like, this restaurant doesn't look like, this looks like just an office park, just office buildings. And I'm looking around, I drive around for it, I can't find it. The address doesn't even sound like the name of a restaurant. It's called Yellow Cutter something or other. So I call them, hey, where is your establishment? Oh, we're in this building, you can't see it from the street. I was like, okay. So I drive around and around. Before I even called the place, I talked to somebody come out of it. I was like, hey, is there a so-and-so restaurant? And he's like, it's in the other building around the corner, but it's like a cafeteria for employees. Are you sure? I was like, they say they're doing an open mic there. They do an open mic there. I mean, if the guy who knows what the place is surprised by it, probably not going to be good. I'm just watching cars leave the parking lot because it's 5 o'clock at night. It's time to go home. So I call the guy, he gives me kind of directions, not very good directions. I find the place, I get in there, and it is exactly that. It's a small little cafe inside of an office park. There's nobody in the place right now. It looks closed. It looks empty and abandoned. And I'm asking the guy, I'm like, there's an open mic here? You know, I see signs for trivia. Yeah, the person who hosted, they'll be here probably like in an hour or so. Do you get anybody here for this? Yeah. He doesn't really seem sure of it. And then he looks at me and goes, yeah, but we don't allow dogs. I'm like, I have a sister with me. She heard her name and she stirred. I was like, well, she's a service dog. Yeah, you still can't bring a service dog. Oh, legally, you can't stop me from bringing a service dog. It doesn't matter, though, because this is clearly going to be a waste of my time. Goodbye. And I leave. Now I'm being an asshole. I am. Now I'm not going to. I'm going to call a spade a spade. I'm angry. I'm upset. I'm annoyed. Because things weren't going right already, and I put myself in a situation where things were already not going to go right. Why are can we please stop telling comedians that create their own rooms and spaces? New comedians. Can we stop it? Can we stop telling comedians who are like, I don't get enough stage time. Oh, create your own. Stop it. No, because they don't know what they're doing. If they couldn't figure out how to create their own stage time on their own, stop putting the idea in their head because they're not at the level where they should be at it. Maybe I shouldn't be advocating for this, but maybe we should need more gatekeeping in comedy. We have, it feels like, especially in Boston, there is almost no gatekeeping. The gatekeeping is amongst each other. We're a bunch of crabs holding each other down. Maybe we need somebody in place who will hold, who will gatekeep on the grounds of quality and not ethnicity, gender, sex, age, stuff like that. Let's eliminate all that from gatekeeping and let's just make this back comedy a meritocracy. Because we let these comedians who are full of enthusiasm, but not full of jokes, or full of talent, or full of the ability to, they go out and they create the shows, mostly open mics, because what else, they don't know anything better than to do an open mic. So they go to these places, they pitch these open mics, there's no standard of quality, and that's the problem, that we're devaluing comedy in general, when we let people who don't have the ability to do comedy well, because everyone thinks they can do comedy. Nobody realizes it's a craft, that it's an art, that it's you have to create, you have to have talent. There's a formula. Jokes have a formula. They're not just brought to you by divine intervention, which is, I probably harp about that a lot if you listen to podcasts enough. Jokes don't just come to you from the gods. You create them. You craft them. So you do a story, a painting, a song. Art. Some people are going to take objection to say comedy is not art, and that's fine. But it's still a craft. It's still being created. So we let these people create these places in unusual venues or venues that could be good, and we ruin the opportunity because you have somebody put in place who doesn't know what they're doing. Right now in Boston, I just saw somebody is doing an open mic, new open mic at the Moxie, which is a high-end restaurant inside of a hotel, a very expensive hotel in the theater district. To get in, by the way, you have to go up to the second floor and ask them for the elevator code, and they got to let you in and turn a key at the same time as somebody else, like it's the goddamn nuclear codes. So you can get up to the 24th floor to do this open mic in a space that's not designed for to be advantageous to comedy, because they showed a little video of it. I'm like, this is just a lounge. It's people don't want to listen to comedy sitting on couches spread out through a room. But also, you're advertising it to get people, hey, bring some of your friends to the open mic. Yeah, we need people at open mics. Open mics need to stop being a bunch of lonely douchebag dudes with backwards hats and hoodies talking about their dicks to each other. And then we ruin these venues anyway, and we make people think, oh yeah, comedy is not good. Local comedians are not good. You're doing a disservice to all of us. So I left there. I went to another open mic.
By the way, we are in the home of Coca-Cola. I found this out today. I went to the world of Coca-Cola. And did you know the official liquid of the city of Atlanta is? Insulin, because you all have fucking diabetes too. Fucking laugh, or 20 years from now, you're all going to fucking hobble out of your own open mics 20 years from now. All right. I can tell. Was it genetic or the cops? Okay. So God hates you as much as the police do. All right.
Which was all the way back across town on the south end, right near where my hotel was. So I, could have just had a quicker drive, so went all the way across Atlanta, all the way back, sitting in traffic, get there super early. They're doing trivia, actually. So I sat, did a little bit of trivia, and had fun, had something to eat. It was the open mic that I just described, where a bunch of dudes sitting around talking about their dicks at each other and complaining why nobody's laughing at it. Three women showed up. They went up, one, two, three, bang, bang, bang. They weren't very good. Clearly, they're in some kind of comedy class together, and they left immediately after their set. So you're also not contributing to the room and the space, which I don't blame them, because as soon as they left, some dude goes, oh, why did that pretty girl leave? I wanted to look at her the entire time, instead of looking at you, ugly fucks. Maybe that's why she left, because this is how you treat women. I did only eat fast food while in Atlanta. They had so much great food, and like, here's, like, I am upset myself, because like when I was getting on the tour, while I was waiting for it, I don't feel like I had enough time to sit down at a restaurant and eat and order something nice at a barbecue joint. So I go to Chick-fil-A just to get a sandwich. I do the tour, I do the Coca-Cola Museum. Between the Coca-Cola Museum and the open mic, that was a waste of my time at the empty office building. I didn't eat anything because I wanted to get there. I didn't have enough time to sit down at the place. So I get there and I could have had enough time to sit down somewhere and get something to eat, but I didn't. I went to Arby's and I got something to eat. I did eat something at the Cantina place where we did the open mic, but I had a small little appetizer and it wasn't very good. I had what, cheesesteak egg rolls, or, you know, Southwest egg rolls, or whatever it is now. Everybody's putting bread meat of some sort in an egg roll. It's a very popular thing now, and it used to be really good, but this, they had that plastic fake cheese in it, that nacho cheese in it. I didn't like it. But the only good thing that came out of Atlanta really was I got to see pandemic friend Josh DeAnato. We should have took pictures together, but we've seen each other in real life since the pandemic. But he was like, dude, if you would have told me you're coming to Atlanta, I would have offered you my house. I have plenty of space in my house. I got a house in Chicago. If you're going to Chicago, let me know. Okay, so it's nice. I got a friend who will set me up with something. He doesn't live in a Marriott, but I'll make the exception.
Ah!